Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. There is increasing concern about the status of two landfills in Bridgeton as a slow-moving underground fire moves from one toward the other. The fire is in the Bridgeton landfill, edging toward the adjacent West Lake landfill. West Lake contains radioactive waste left over from World War II, which was illegally dumped at that site. Now it's believed similar material is included in the Bridgeton landfill and in the path of the fire. A plan is being considered to build a barrier to prevent the fire from spreading from one landfill to the other. Residents and environmentalists are concerned that the area and perhaps communities miles away are threatened by a potential toxic contamination above and below ground. Landfill owner Republic Services says there is no health threat to the community. Another fire sparked by a methane gas leak broke out recently, emitting huge plumes of smoke, exacerbating fears. There are many players in the situation, including the EPA, the Department of Natural Resources, and the Missouri Attorney General's Office. It is complicated. Joining me to talk about it, St. Louis Public Radio science reporter Veronique LaCapra, who has been covering the story. Ed Smith is Safe Energy Director with the Missouri Coalition for the Environment Services. Dawn Chapman is a resident who lives near the landfill. She joins us by phone. Russ Nockey, Director of Public Affairs for Republic Services, also joins us by phone. He is in Arizona. Later, we'll talk with the EPA Regional Administrator, Carl Brooks. Thank you all so much for being with us. As I indicated, this is a complicated story. I hope we can uncomplicate it during the course of the next hour. Veronique, I'd like to begin with you. Many moving parts to this story. What stands out in your mind?
Well, I guess the two main concerns that people have raised about these landfills is, one, the underground fire, which I should say we use the word fire because it's easier. It's a kind of a shorthand. This is actually more of an underground chemical reaction that basically heats up the waste. And the threshold for calling it an underground fire is around 170 degrees. But there have been temperatures, I think, of more than 300. Ed can probably know this, but more than 300 degrees at the landfill that have been measured. But so there's this underground fire. It's emitting smells, which are affecting area residents pretty severely. People report symptoms anywhere from nosebleeds to nausea to headaches, and asthma, things like that. But in those smells are compounds, and they range from things like carbon monoxide to hydrogen sulfide, sulfur dioxide, benzene, which is a known carcinogen. So all of these things are being monitored by the Missouri Department of Natural Resources. So there's that element of it, the fire. And then in the Westlake landfill, there's radioactive waste that was illegally dumped there in the 70s. And this gets even more complicated because, as I mentioned, the Missouri Department of Natural Resources, they're responsible for the Bridgeton landfill, which is where the fire is. The EPA, the federal EPA, is responsible for the Westlake landfill, which is where the radioactive waste is concentrated.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, thank you for giving us that part of the story. The fire's
been complicated.
Fire's been burning for a couple of years.
For over 3 years now.
Ed, what's your biggest concern with all of this?
There are lots of concerns. The first is that we don't have an independent on-site evaluation of what's going on. Currently, the way Superfund is set up, you have the responsible parties in charge of the site study and investigation regarding the radioactive waste. The Westlake landfill is a Superfund site.
Let me stop you. It's a Superfund site. Explain to our audience what that means.
There are lots of Superfund sites around the country. The EPA qualifies sites as Superfund and then goes through a process where the financially responsible parties are identified, held accountable for – actually, they're actually put in charge of selecting a contractor to evaluate the site characteristics and health threats to the community. And then the EPA reviews the documents assembled by the responsible parties, and then they move from there and make a decision on what's best to do.
The EPA, basically, Superfund sites are just really, really contaminated sites that the EPA is responsible for.
The EPA is overseeing the Westlake landfill, the Department of Natural Resources, the Bridgeton landfill, correct?
Correct. It's all technically the Westlake landfill, and it's all technically a Superfund site. decades ago, the EPA allowed the Department of Natural Resources in Missouri to take the lead on the site of the landfill where trash was still being accepted. So ultimately, the authority lies with the EPA.
Right.
On both sides.
Right. Let me turn to Dawn Chapman now. Dawn, give us some sense of what life is like for you and your family there in that area near the landfill.
Well, you know, I think a lot of times we feel like we're being held hostage. You know, it's you wake up in the morning and it's hard to make any plans because you don't know what it's going to be like outside. You know, it's you're going to drive your kids to school. You're going to let them stand out and catch the school bus. And, you know, and it's even more difficult when it gets inside your home because what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to find a place to go during the daytime, you know? You know, you're going to let your dogs outside. It's a really horrible situation just with the smell. And then, you know, you take into consideration, like you guys just pointed out, the Superfund part of it, the radioactive waste part of it. You know, we're scared to death. Every time we turn around, there's a new report coming out saying that they found something new. And it's very difficult for anybody who lives around this site to feel like anybody has this situation, anybody's in control. It just feels like it's spinning out of control, and we're waiting for somebody to jump in and save the day.
Have you been affected? Has your health been affected at all?
You know, it has. When you're in the smell, you know, like Veronique pointed out, it's anything from the headache to nosebleeds. My daughter has severe asthma, you know, so there's that. It's a scary, you know, even going to the grocery store, you know, you don't really know what to do. You're shopping in Target, and next thing you know, the smell's inside of Target, and everybody's gagging. So it absolutely holds you hostage over everything that we do in our lives right now.
Let me turn to Russ Nocke now. Russ, it sounds like Republic Services has a problem.
Well, I think I'd start by saying we're the first to acknowledge that both sites have been a significant source of public concern and frustration, particularly in the last year. You know, we share that frustration. We've had a team of more than 80 contractors and 12 landfill professionals, environmental managers that are out there working the site, even in the extreme winter, 24/7 to make site improvements. And what I mean by that are digging new wells to help mitigate odor. We installed a cap by working from both sides in, which is abnormal in the landfill management space. We are putting in a state-of-the-art leachate pretreatment facility. We're literally working around the clock and investing millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, to try to do everything we can to mitigate the odor and address some of these public concerns. That even includes the installation of an isolation barrier, which I'm sure that we'll get to a little bit later in the conversation. But, you know, the comments made earlier about this being a very complex site are absolutely correct. There are a number of regulatory authorities that are involved at federal and state level, a significant amount of moving parts, and frankly, the site itself is extraordinarily complex. But if nothing else, we recognize that there's a tremendous amount of public frustration. We share that frustration, and we're literally moving heaven and earth to try to mitigate the odors and ensure that both sites continue to remain safe.
Russ, this is Veronique. You mentioned that cap. It's a kind of plastic cap that's been put over the part of the landfill where the fire is burning underground, and I just want to mention that our local paper here, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, had an article this morning where they mentioned that there have been 355 odor reports since that cap was put in this past August. If this is supposed to be controlling odors, it doesn't seem to be working.
Well, I thanks, Veronique. I'm glad you raised that. You know, there's a difference between odor complaints and actual odor occurrences. There are a lot of things that can cause an odor complaint, such as actual odors. You know, other factors in odor complaints can be, you know, organized, you know, efforts to make sure that, you know, as odor detections go down, the actual occurrences, the number of complaints go up. We have experienced that. If you look at the actual MDNR data, which is, you know, made public on their website, you can link to it as well through bridgestonlandfill.com, you'll see that going back to the spring, there's just been, in relative to odor occurrences, a significant decrease. Now, I say that, but I don't want to diminish the fact that our neighbors and the community continue to be frustrated. There have been odor occurrences despite, you know, the market reduction. We recognize that people have complaints, and certainly their right to to make those complaints. When that happens, we work with MDNR to address and mitigate them as best we can. It's just a very complex situation, but as I say, we're investing, you know, significant resources from CAPS to leachate pretreatment facilities to new wells to really mitigate what are the large, you know, the major contributing factors to odor.
Russ, a spokesperson for your company says that there are no health risks. And yet we've just heard from Dawn, and we're reading in our morning paper that there certainly seem to be health risks. People are throwing up. They're having bloody noses. I have some material in front of me from people who have emailed us talking about migraine headaches that are directly attributed by this person to the odor and whatever is floating around the air. And another writer says, we live in constant fear that this fire or a new one will reach the radioactive waste and it will become airborne. We do not feel safe.
Sure. So two issues there. The first, you know, with respect to health risk, you know, the community, you know, rightly looks at regulatory authorities like the EPA, like MDNR, when they're evaluating public health and safety, you know, at landfills. And those authorities continue to say that both sites remain safe. I do not mean to diminish, you know, some of the concerns that we continue to hear from community members. We take those very seriously. But again, looking at what regulatory authorities say, they continue to make very clear that both sites remain safe. With respect to public concern or even fear about what could happen, I suppose I would tell you that if we're guilty of anything over the last year, it's that we've devoted so much time and effort and resources to working the problems. Actually, what I mean, fixing the odor-causing issues. They're not entirely fixed yet, but we've made significant headway that would at other sites potentially take 2-3 years in some cases, depending on the project work we're doing. Making significant headway at trying to mitigate the odors and work with the EPA with respect to some of the ongoing, you know, issues and debate at Westlake, so that we can continue to ensure that both sites are safe. So if we're guilty of anything in the last year, I suppose it would be that we've been working the problem and maybe not been as communicative with the community as maybe we could or should have been.
And I
would agree with that.
Go ahead, Dawn. I was just going to ask if you are reassured by what you've just heard.
I would agree with that. You know, you're our neighbor. You know, we consider you to be a neighbor in this community. And, you know, you are part of this problem, but you are also part of the solution. And it's high time that you came out and started speaking to us and not glossy flyers. You know, we hold public meetings once a month, and your excuses were under litigation. Listen, I've never been under litigation, and I've always been open to sitting down with you guys in meeting, because I think at the end of the day, no matter what happens at this landfill, it's obvious that you're not going anywhere, and frankly, I don't want to go anywhere. So at some point, we have to find a way to reach mutual ground and get along. And you know, it's much easier if you come out and you talk to us about this issue. I understand that you guys are working. I've been out there sometimes when the smell is occurring at 2 o'clock in the morning and I can see people working on that landfill. I don't doubt. The most important thing is that no matter how hard you work on this landfill, you still have a beast of a fire burning. It's an enormous situation, and at some point you're going to have to call it what it is. You know, the glossy flyers and stuff that you sent around last year very much minimized this situation, and now you're maximizing it. You're saying, yes, it's a huge situation. It's good to hear you say that, because for the longest time, all we heard was the different departments, the different agencies saying, oh, yeah, this is a problem. And then we heard Republic saying, oh, it's not that bad. It's not that big of a deal. So, you know, the other thing I would ask is, you know, when you talk about health effects, I mean, I think if you go back to my little girl with asthma, I think everybody on this, you know, within listening distance of this would agree that an asthma attack can be very, very serious. And if you call the Department of Health, they'll tell you flat out that if your children have asthma and if you're sensitive, stay out of the smell, because it very much can trigger an asthma attack. I consider that to be a health effect. I really do. I consider that to be a potentially dangerous situation. So, you know, that has to be acknowledged.
Russ, let me give you a quick second to respond to that. I have to take a break, but if you want to jump on that right now, go ahead.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, in terms of, you know, jumping out and communicating more with the public, you know, Don, it really starts with the gracious invitation you extended to us to be a part of this program today, and we appreciate that, and we hope there'll be more opportunities going forward. You know, I'm not going to pretend to be a medical professional. I can imagine from where Ms. Chapman sits that it's, with respect to her daughter, it's very alarming and very concerning, whatever health circumstance might be involved. I would just reiterate again that when it comes to health and public safety at landfills, the practice in our country is to look at the regulatory authorities who have oversight for these landfills. That's the EPA in the case of Missouri. It's MDNR. And they continue to reiterate based after study, you know, and frankly, years, if not decades worth of evidence that both sites continue to be safe, that there are no public health and safety risks. I do not mean to diminish what Ms. Chapman is talking about with respect to her daughter. But again, as we look at both authorities, that's what they continue to say.
That's Russ Naki, Director of Public Affairs for Republic Services, which operates the landfills in question, the Bridgeton landfill and the West Lake landfill. He mentioned the DNR, Department of Natural Resources here in Missouri, which is a player in all of this. We invited a representative from DNR to be with us, and that invitation was declined. We'll have to take a break now. Continue the conversation in just a moment. Ed Smith with the Missouri Coalition for the Environment is with me in studio. You just heard from Russ Naki and also from Dawn Chapman, a resident in the area in question. Also with me in studio is Veronique LaCapra, science reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. We'll take that break now and come back and continue in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Welcome back. As we continue our conversation on the landfills in Bridgeton that have been getting so much attention recently, neighbors complaining about the noxious smell, if you will, in the area and concerns about an underground fire. We'll continue that conversation in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Today at 5 p.m. is the deadline for candidates in Missouri to file paperwork for this year's elections. Barring a last-day surge, Missouri is on pace to have its fewest number of candidates in a couple of decades. And Missouri Auditor Tom Schweik released a report today about Missouri's tax credit program for the renovation of historic buildings, which is the largest such initiative in the country. Schweik says the program has a laudable goal of encouraging the renewal of rundown buildings, but he says it's inefficient. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about those landfills. My guests once again, Ed Smith with the Missouri Coalition for the Environment, Veronique LaCapra, science reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. Russ Naki is Director of Public Affairs for Republic Services, and Dawn Chapman is a resident of the area in which these landfills are located. Ed Smith, you've been patiently waiting, and I know you want to react to some of the things you've heard. Go ahead.
Yes. Regarding health, the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services, the lead health agency on the smoldering fire side, has yet to conduct a chronic health examination, meaning what they've been recording so far has only been risks to public health from acute exposure, not chronic long-term exposure. This fire has been burning for 3 years. And with landfill fires, like coal mine fires, there's no telling how long they could continue to burn. They'll go until they run out of fuel. Secondly, I think it's improper to say that there's zero risk regarding the radioactive wastes. One thing the Environmental Protection Agency has been challenged on is the characterization of the radioactive waste. Dr. Bob Criss at Washington University released a report a year ago challenging the EPA's characterization of the radioactive wastes, saying that they're not what the EPA thinks they are. Community researchers have found a report that corroborates Dr. Criss's scientific understanding. And not only that, these wastes came from a site that's currently under the jurisdiction of the Army Corps of Engineers, what's called the Formerly Utilized Sites Remedial Action Program, FUSRAP. And what FUSRAP does is address nuclear weapons waste sites around the country to remediate sites to make sure they're not a threat to the public health. And so what EPA never did was ask FUSRAP, or the Army Corps of Engineers, who's in charge of Laddie Avenue, where the radioactive waste came from in Hazelwood, about the radioactive makeup of that material, which they have since cleaned up and moved out of the state of Missouri. So I challenge the understanding of the health impacts here. Again, no fire was considered in the health analysis and risk assessment of the EPA's 2008 decision to leave the radioactive wastes at the landfill. The only report on what happens if a fire hits those radioactive wastes or vice versa, it has been conducted by the contractor hired by Republic Services, which found no environmental or health impact if the smoldering fire hits the radioactive wastes. This is a report that we challenge. We believe it was a very narrow view in order to meet that goal of saying everything's fine. And we will be submitting a letter to the EPA in the very near future challenging the findings of this report.
Resnocki, why can't you put the fire out?
Well, let's start again at a very point when we began this conversation. I realize it's simpler and easier to say fire, but it is in fact not a fire. A fire requires oxygen. This is something that's happening, you know, 24 feet, if not more, below ground surface level. It's the result of a chemical reaction. So there is no oxygen. It's not a fire. Again, I realize it's simpler to say that than a subsurface smoldering event or a chemical heat-related
We get that. Why can't you stop whatever is happening down there?
Well, so I would begin with, each of these events, subsurface smoldering events, they're unique. You know, if anything, the community might not, totally appreciate this just yet, but there is some serendipity in the fact that we're the company. We didn't start any of this. We didn't put any of this there. This landfill was part of a larger acquisition a few years ago. But we are the second largest environmental services and waste and recycling company in the country. We operate more than 190 landfills around the country. We have some familiarity, tremendous expertise, resources, and capabilities for managing landfills. Sometimes there are events such as a subsurface smoldering event. Each of these events is unique, and the mitigation measures that you adopt are going to be customized to a particular site. This is a very complex event. It's one that, Don, if I could give you a date when it's going to be extinguished, I would. It's something that we just can't simply do at this stage. But we're doing everything we can, working with MDNR and other authorities to mitigate it. And part of that mitigation includes, to the point Ed, was just attempting to address with respect to Westlake, is the installation of an isolation barrier.
Right. And the Attorney General of Missouri seems to think that you could get started on that barrier right now, but you are choosing to wait until all the regulatory agencies have weighed in. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. We are committed to to putting in and completing a rapid construction of the isolation barrier as soon as a plan is approved by the regulating authorities, yes.
And that's going to take about 3 months?
I don't know that I could speak on behalf of EPA, MDNR, and the Attorney General, who also, as you pointed out, has a stake in this. I don't know that I could speak to their timetables, but as soon as a plan is approved, we're committed to the rapid construction of an isolation barrier. I mean, this really goes back to, I think, some of the things that we've heard Don hint at, which is, public concern, and I think, Don, you used the term fear even.
Right.
We recognize that, that this barrier is a contingency barrier, and it will go far, we hope, to provide peace of mind for the community. Now I should point out there is no data thus far to suggest that the subsurface smoldering event is moving in the direction of Westlake Landfill. There are a series of triggers that we worked out a long time ago with MDNR and with the Attorney General that we would implement in the event that we started to see migration of the subsurface smoldering event in the direction of the radiological materials. That has not happened, but we recognize that for peace of mind, if nothing else, rapid construction of the isolation barrier is important to the community. So we said we'll do it as soon as the plan's approved.
I wanted to say just one thing, Donna, and then I'll let you talk. Yeah. This is Veronique, but I'm not sure what time frame you're speaking about, Russ, but certainly in the time that I've been reporting this story over over the last couple of years. There has been evidence that the fire is moving north. It was completely contained in what people call the south quarry of the landfill, and it has definitely moved north into the narrow neck and has moved towards in the direction of the radioactive waste.
I think the last that I saw, Veronique, is that it was moving at about 6 inches per month. And you're talking about a distance of approximately 1,200 feet. There has certainly been movement. I want to be clear, if I was unclear a moment ago, the SSE is not sitting idle. It does move around because it's a chemical reaction based on the decomposition of waste. And so that reaction feeds off of waste. So it does migrate in the direction of waste that it can feed off of. But the general distance between the SSE and the rad waste continues to be at about approximately 1,200 feet.
Actually, the EPA just confirmed last week that that distance is more like 900 to 1,000 feet, in part because they're finding radioactive waste further south than they thought it was.
Right.
So,
Dawn, did you have something you wanted to add?
I did. You know, you speak of peace of mind. I'll tell you right now, if you want to give me peace of mind personally, get back on those Monday morning phone calls with the local fire department and Department of Natural Resources. That would be a really, really great gesture for Republic Services to do because, you know, when you guys backed out of those phone calls, and again, I don't care why, you really kind of put a distance between yourself and this community. We rely on all those people on those phone calls to feed us because, Lord knows, we get information secondhand. We're not allowed on those phone calls, and they're not even sunshineable. So peace of mind-wise, yeah, definitely please get back on those phone calls because that would mean a lot to us. Second of all, as Veronique said, it is moving. It's just moving extremely slowly. But even 6 inches, that's movement forward. So call it what it is. Don't hide behind, well, it's stalled. Don't hide.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm not hiding. I'm not stalling. All I'm saying, I believe Don asked the question of, you know, where are we with the isolation barrier and when's it going to be built? The point I'm trying to make to you, Ms. Chapman, and to everybody in the community is we're committed to the rapid construction of an isolation barrier as soon as it's been approved. Again, there were a series of triggers that we worked out with the regulatory authorities in the state of Missouri for how we would move more quickly in the event that we needed to. I suppose we could parse out 900 feet, 1,000 feet, 1,200 feet, moving at 6 inches. While there is movement, we still have not hit the triggers that I just mentioned, and we're committed, once a plan's approved, to installing the isolation barrier as quickly as we can.
Russ, have you ever been there? Russ, you're in Arizona right now. Have you ever been to the site?
Yes, sir, I have a few times and hope to get back as early as next week.
All righty. Ed, go ahead.
I would just like to remind your listeners that the radioactive waste originated from St. Louis's role in purifying uranium for nuclear weapons during World War II. That effort started downtown. These wastes were moved to the St. Louis airport. That's what contaminated Coldwater Creek and raised all these health issues along the creek. They moved from there to Laddie Avenue in Hazelwood. And from Laddie Avenue in Hazelwood, they were dumped at the Westlake landfill in 1973. All of those sites, except for the Westlake landfill, is under the control of the Army Corps of Engineers, FUSRAP, specifically created by Congress to address nuclear weapons radioactive wastes. It's our position that the Army Corps of Engineers, FUSRAP, which is intimately familiar with these radioactive wastes, should be the lead regulatory agency of the federal government overseeing what happens at the Westlake landfill. And we're not the only ones. DePaul, SSM, the hospital right there, Pattonville School District, Pattonville Fire Protection District, St. Louis County Council, Executive Dooley, St. Louis Board of Aldermen, Senator McCaskill, Senator Blunt, Congressman Clay, Congresswoman Wagner, and many, many more support the Corps of Engineers FUSRAP taking over the Westlake landfill, and for very good reason, because what we have seen during this isolation barrier investigation is that they have found now two areas of radioactive waste at the landfill that were not previously identified. That either resulted from poor characterization of the radioactive waste by the Environmental Protection Agency and the responsible parties that are in charge of investigating the site, or the radioactive wastes have moved since the 2008 decision by the EPA to leave them there. They did not go through the rigorous screening process that the Corps of Engineers uses when trying to identify where radioactive wastes are present. And we feel because of the very unique nature of these radioactive wastes, the fact that they'll become up to 100 times more radioactive over the next 1,000 years, that the Corps of Engineers needs to be put in charge immediately.
Okay. We'll be talking about that, I'm sure, with Mr. Brooks from the EPA when we talk with him in just a couple of moments. I'd like to take one very quick phone call, if we can. A number of people who wanted to get into the conversation. Time has gone by very quickly, but let's bring in Gregory calling from Bridgeton. Go ahead, Gregory, but make it quick, if you would.
Yeah, I was just calling in to make a few comments. I was listening myself, and I live not even probably two blocks away from this place. And, I mean, it is a nuisance. And, I mean, he said they're capping it or something, and the smell, the odor's not bad. The hours I work, every night when I come home, it stinks. I mean, it's fairly bad. It's no different than it was 6 months ago. It just seems like they're burping it or doing something late at night after 11 o'clock, and he's saying that there's no health issues. Well, I mean, I'm in great shape. I'm a runner and so on and so forth. So, I mean, you guys are saying that there's no health issues for it. Well, I have headaches every night when I go home from smelling that stuff. I hate even getting out of my car. The second I pull up at Bridgeton at 270 at St. Charles Rock Road, I can smell it. You know, so then I go to my house and it's just ridiculous. I can't open my windows.
Gregory, I have to stop you there. I appreciate what you're saying, but I think you're just repeating essentially what our other guest, Dawn Chapman, has said, and time has become a consideration. But I thank you for the call. Any quick response, and it would have to be quick, Russ, that you would like to make to that?
You know, again, I'd just say we're sympathetic. We're you know, completely aware of the fact that, you know, the odors have been a tremendous source of frustration for the neighbors in the community. We have, as a reminder, a few hundred employees that work, you know, employees and contractors that work on or near the site on a regular basis. We're as frustrated with the odor situation as the community is. We're doing everything we can, moving in heaven and earth to mitigate it as quickly as possible.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Russ Naki, for being with us from Republic Services. I have to leave this portion of the program right now. Ed Smith, thank you so much for being with us. And John, Dawn Chapman, thank you. Now you can get back to those kids and play with them for the rest of their spring vacation. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye. We'll continue the conversation with EPA Regional Administrator Carl Brooks in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.